Hi, welcome to the show. How about you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Kevin Giguere. I'm the programmer and designer for Aerolite Core, a JRPG for Windows.
Great. And what is Aerolite Core about? What kind of JRPG?
So, Aerolite Core is a traditional JRPG. It's very inspired by the great SNES titles like Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger. But at the same time, it doesn't. I didn't limit myself to traditional design. I put in a lot of more modern conveniences and a lot of ideas of my own. I didn't want to copy. The old school. I do have old school aesthetics, but I have they are of higher quality. They are of a higher resolution, and yeah. In terms of design, I really took an approach to make it accessible to modern gamers while at the same time feeling like an old school title. So, for instance, I didn't limit saving. You can save anywhere. You can forge weapons. You can. There are a lot of systems in place which makes it different than the old titles were. Old titles were more limited in a lot of senses.
Yeah, what inspired you to make a JRPG?
This was a bit of my folly. I made a JRPG because I wanted to. First off, I wanted to make an engine, and I figured that making a JRPG, since it doesn't require a lot of interaction between elements, I figured making an engine would be simple. So I decided that I would work on that, but. Once I got started, and once I started working on the engine itself and on the game itself, I did discover that making a full-fledged JRPG would take a lot of time, and it's been almost 4 years now since I started development on the game. So I do still have the passion for it. I think it's coming along really nicely, but it definitely is taking a lot more time than I expected. But you know, quality requires time.
How long did you expect it to take to make this?
I expected about a 2 year, 2.5 year dev process. A lot of what delayed me is because I am a single dev. I started the project on my own. I built the engine myself. I made the design for the game, the design the characters on paper at least. And once I had something solid, I did go out and try to build a team to bring this concept to life. But I did run into some problems, and I basically had to do a lot more things than I expected myself.
What platform is it for?
It's a Windows title.
Okay.
So Aerolite Core is made for Windows. Right now I'm also looking into making it available on Macintosh. I built the game in XNA, which is a
Oh, yeah.
Microsoft language, which no longer is supported by Microsoft actually. So I would need to change the back end to make it available on Mac, but there has been a lot of demand for it. And it's also it's been greenlit already on Steam.
Okay.
So I went to the green light process last year, and once the game is ready to be shipped, it'll be made available directly on Steam.
Did you ever consider using a development tool or one of those third-party tools to actually accelerate? I know you mentioned XNA, but I mean, like some of these cross-platform tools to actually have it, like Unity or something else, to so that your game can be accessible across even mobile and stuff.
You have to remember that the development started back in 2012, and in 2012 Unity did exist, but it wasn't very accessible for 2D games. It wasn't the best tool for 2D games. Nowadays, it's they did a lot of work for UI and 2D work in general.
Yeah, and I think their business model was different too. I don't even
Definitely. Yeah. They're a lot of more indie friendly nowadays than they were before.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what about some, because when I interview other, you know, indie developers, it's like part of the reason I feel like it takes a long time to develop is because of maybe not using the right tool or third-party tool to get things going. I mean, the other thing is distribution, but it seems like now that you have the Steam thing, you get more exposure than just trying to promote it on your own site.
Absolutely. Well, as I wouldn't say that Steam brought me a lot of exposure thus far. Right now, a lot of my exposure is coming from just releasing trailers, and I released an alpha actually this week, which people can play on airlightcore.com. And when I do these things, the press picks it up, so it does give me some exposure in that sense. Yeah, but really, it's taking a long time to make the game, not exactly because of the engine, although that is definitely a part of it, because I do have to tweak a lot of code once in a while, but also because it is a huge game. I really wanted to inspire myself with old school titles, and that meant for me creating an epic adventure, creating a lot of diversity. There I have over 100 monsters which are fully animated. I have 30 different environments, and because I have so much diversity, as far as creating assets by the artist, that takes a lot of time. And also, for me personally, when I'm building the story, I'm putting a lot of time to make it dynamic, make it visually interesting, and not just be a lot of dialogue between characters. I think it's really important I really want to have a cinematic feel for the game, and that takes a lot of time to produce.
I think one other approach that I've seen work is that developers will release stuff early on just to get feedback and keep on getting things going and just to have a dialogue with the community. Is there any reason why you didn't consider that approach and you tried to perfect things before you released the alpha this week?
I did release a few versions privately before this week. Actually, I've been testing versions since April of last year. I went to a small convention and I had people try it out at that time. I got some good feedback at that time, but I also tried with other developers, put it in their hands, see how they reacted, what they liked, what they didn't like. It took me some time because I wanted to make sure that when I present something to the community, I want it to make sense. I feel like a JRPG, and especially a story-driven JRPG, isn't the same kind of title as, for instance, a Super Meat Boy, where it's very level. It's a very level-driven game, so when you're adjusting things, I feel like it's a bit more. It's just more dynamic than a JRPG tends to be.
You mentioned some new systems in your game and some innovations. Can you discuss that? And
yeah, so I do. I did spend a lot of time in the battle system, specifically trying to come up with new ideas and overcoming part of the problem of a lot of JRPGs, which is just press attack all the time until you win. Part of what I did is, instead of having a mana system, I have what I call Blitz. And Blitz is like a super meter in a fighting game, where when you attack, when you receive damage, you build your Blitz bar, and when it's full, you have access to some special moves. So...
And do those moves disappear once the bar is below the full thing, or can you?
Well, It's a right now it's a special move where when you use it, it uses your blitz. So it's the equivalent of using your mana, basically.
Okay.
So you continue building it during the fight. I also put a lot of work into making defend a viable option. It's often an option in JRPGs, but no one uses it because it doesn't serve any real gameplay purposes. In my game, defend builds more blitz, it's a bit faster than attacking, and you can also assign character specific attribute to to that defend option, which I call parry. You can assign special attributes. For instance, the healer, when she parries, might heal the entire party partially. So it's just adding stuff to giving the player more tools to play with when he's in battle and make it just more interesting in general. And another one final really important system, which is relatively recent, I have a combo system, which the game is now very much based around, where when you attack a monster repeatedly, it builds a combo, and the more hits you get in, the stronger subsequent hits become. So there's a strategy there to just build a combo on a monster, and once he has a high enough combo, you can cash in a lot of damage using special moves, like special combo slam moves, which often use the blitz, which are often blitz moves. So it's just having the party work together towards that goal of building blitz, building the combo, and just decimating the enemy that way.
Okay. Any other innovations?
Well, a lot of it is just putting a lot of polish into the game. Like I mentioned, I didn't want to limit saving to just the overworld. I really wanted save to be accessible from anywhere, because you don't know when the player, you don't know how much time the player has. So he might have 10 minutes to play your game. Well, if he has 10 minutes, I don't want to break his pace. I decided to remove inns in general. Instead, when a player enters a town, he's healed immediately. I didn't see the point of just adding an action to do so. You can also forge weapons. Actually, the main character of the game, Cardin, is he's a blacksmith. And as you travel around the world, you find metals. They're fairly rare. They're not. You don't find hundreds and hundreds of metals. You get a few pieces of metal. And once you go into a forge in a town, you can forge specific weapons. But you can't forge everything because you won't have the resources to do so. So you have to make choices every time to say, okay, this time I'm giving Cardin a better hammer. Next time I might give this other character a better armor. So it's just adding things to do for the player and giving him things to discover. I think a big part of what's interesting about JRPGs is just traveling around and discovering chests, discovering various objects, and that's the kind of pacing and kind of feel that I wanted to bring to the game.
How many hours are you aiming in terms of gameplay for this game?
So I'm aiming for about 8 to 10 hours. Right now, my 8 to 10 hours is really a story-driven experience. So it's not, you won't be spending half an hour outside of a town just finding monsters to fight to build your level for the next boss. It's really node to node to node, going from one boss and then discovering the story, discovering the new characters, the events, and then moving on to the next thing. There are things to discover outside of the main quest, but if you stick to the main quest and you go at a regular pace, I'd say the story is about 8 to 10 hours long.
And when I know you mentioned that there are certain like rare items that the player can collect to maybe craft new stuff. Is there a limit on what they can hold, or I mean, is that based on the level they're on, or how does that work?
No, this is very much a JRPG. I didn't want to establish any limits on strength or anything. So everyone can hold. Well, actually, the party can hold 99 of any items. So the limit really becomes what you can find instead. There just aren't enough resources in the world to craft every weapon.
Have you been playtesting the game a lot? What are your thoughts on it so far?
Yeah, well, since I'm making it, I'm playing it quite a bit. I'm really enjoying it. I think I really put in a lot of work. It's a development process, and I've been at it for like I said, almost 4 years. And during that period, there are obviously times when I had to take a system which I just didn't like and remove it and change it, and things definitely evolved since the original vision that I had for the game. One example I have is I have a stance system where characters have various stances which can be customized. And before, what that meant is that during battle, players could select between three different stances, which they would decide what the attributes of them. So one might be stronger, one might be more aimed towards defense. And I, on paper, it seemed like a good idea, but once I put it into the game, I didn't see a reason why the player would want to change stances. I couldn't. I was trying to build the monsters around that system, and it wasn't working out. So that's one example where I had to just put a system down. And you have to accept when you're making these things that you might lose months of work, but at the end of the day, the goal is to make the best game I can. So yeah, I think it definitely evolved, and like I said, right now I did release an alpha preview for the players to check out, and I'm hoping to get feedback about what they like, what they don't like, what they'd like to see more of, less of, because at the end of the day, I'll play it, I'll play it somewhat, but they're the ones who'll be playing it for hundreds and thousands of hours once it's released, so I really want it to be the experience that they want.
For your alpha, is there like a community on Steam that you're also releasing it to, or how does that work? I'm not really into Steam that much, but I know that I've seen developers release stuff on Steam to get feedback.
Yeah, I didn't put in a I didn't want to put in an early access or anything like that. For the alpha, I decided that I put it on a few places like itch.io, itch.io, because I put it up as a free game basically. And I also put it up on my website, of course, aerolitecore.com. And just a few other places like indiedb.com, which caters really to the indie community.
Why not? Why not do early access? What are your thoughts on that?
I was asked by a lot of people why I'm not doing early access, and the reason is really because I think early access is great for a more dynamic game or more modular game, more level
Oh, yeah.
driven.
Okay.
But in my case, because I'm so focused on the story, I really want the player to go from A to Z, from the beginning to the end in, a limited go, basically. So there are places where I could just break it into modules, but because there's also leveling up, and because there's all of these systems, I figured I'd prefer to just release the entire complete experience in one package once it's complete, and in the meantime, just put up this alpha, for instance, and maybe others to come.
Okay. Do you care about mobile at this point for your game, or are you mainly going to focus on PC and Mac potentially?
Right now, I'm really focused on the PC experience and obviously the Mac experience. I think mobile is an interesting platform. I don't know how much a game like mine would perform because I think it's just a different audience. If there was a demand for it, I'd definitely consider it, especially since I coded the game, I could really port it to another platform. But right now it's just not a focus because I don't think that audience is looking for a story-driven experience like mine.
In terms of marketing, what other things are you doing to promote the game? And are you doing pre-sales or anything like that, or?
At this time, I'm not doing pre-sales. I'm really waiting until I'm closer to release. I'm aiming for a fall 2016 release, but so right now it's still a bit far away. As far as marketing, I've done a number of things. Last year, I did go to a small convention, a small local convention, and get the pulse of the audience concerning my game. I've also been releasing a few trailers. I have a second trailer which I released at the tail end of last year, and I've gotten into contact with a few press outlets, just exactly. To promote the game, to promote the alpha, to promote the trailer, a lot of press are real. Like dealing with the press thus far has been a really great experience. I think they're really they really like to work with indies like myself, and they really like to just gravitate around projects like these. So it's been a great experience, and of course, I'm talking on a few podcasts, so that's a great way to spread the word of Aerolite Core.
What about dev blog? Have you looked into that or anything like that where you do weekly or daily updates?
Yeah, I did that for a while. Sometimes I'll post blog posts on IndieDB. I have an account there for Aerolite Core, and I was doing a dev blog on DragonSlumber.com, which is DragonSlumber is my company. Part of the reason why I've slowed down quite a bit on that point is because I just have so many things to manage that it becomes one more thing on my plate. That is, it's difficult to manage programming and designing, and I have to create the maps, and I have to do rewrites if scenes don't work well, and I have to manage the various artists who are working on this project, who are working really hard to bring this project to completion. So I have to work with them and provide them a lot of information because, I'm the only guy who really knows what Aerolite Core is all about. So I have to put on these various hats and make sure that everything is right for when the game is released.
Yeah, it's been a while since you started, and the market can change. It's a really different market since, or from 2012 to now. So, did you think about trying to get it done in a year or in a few months? What are your thoughts on that? Did you look into maybe getting a partner or working with other people in a more concerted way?
Yeah, actually, when I started Aerolite Core, that was my goal because my credentials are one. I'm a programmer, but I'm not exactly artistically inclined. So I really wanted to work with an artist to just tag team on this thing. It didn't exactly work out. I found it difficult to. I don't know if maybe I wasn't in touch with the right people. But I couldn't find a partner who I felt I was on the same wavelength for what I wanted to do with Aerolite Core. Because I know, like you said, the market has changed, and since over the last 3 years, there are a lot of indie JRPGs which have come out. And no small thanks for RPG Maker, which has made it really easy to make JRPGs. So for me, that approach, what that means is, I just want to do something different, something bigger than a lot of indie JRPGs tend to do. And that's really what Aerolite Core is about, and that's really why it's taking such a long time, because I mean I could probably botch the ending to this and put it up, but you know, you get one shot at making this great game, so I'd rather take my time, make sure that everything is the way it should be, that players not only start the game and enjoy it, but they enjoy the experience throughout the game. And once it's done, and once the credits start rolling, that they think, wow, this was a great experience, a memorable experience. And yeah, that just takes time. Polish takes time.
Well, how do you balance timing with polish? Because like you said, there are other indie developers that have now released JRPGs, and they might get the momentum in the market because they're there first. People now can congregate around them. Or have you even seen that happen? Maybe, well, you haven't seen a JRPG, indie JRPG, that's even taken off yet. And so
No. I can name one off the top of my head. Undertale, which is really recent. And Undertale is an example of a brilliant game. A lot of brilliant design decisions. It's a brilliant game all around. Story, visually, it's you know, very interesting. I believe the designer is Toby Fox. He's an amazing guy. For Aerolite Core, I guess one of the you might call issues is that I built it around content. So I have a lot of locations, a lot of monsters, and because I have so many things, I have to produce all of that, basically. Get the artist to make all of the bosses, all of those monsters. And yeah, it definitely takes time, and it does require a level of dedication. Like I said, it's taking me longer than I expected. But at the same time, when I'm looking at what's been done thus far in the game, and you know how far I've come, and what the game actually is, I think people will be quite satisfied with the results. I think it'll be like I said, it'll feel like a traditional an old school Final Fantasy in every respect of the word. So having a strong story, a strong presentation, interesting characters, and just a lot of content in general.
Well, since 2012, Kickstarter came up, you know, kind of, it's been more prominent. Did you think about doing a Kickstarter campaign?
I have, and I did look into the Kickstarter quite a bit. I think Kickstarter, I don't think people, I haven't done it, but I've really looked into it. I don't think a lot of people realize what it takes to get a successful Kickstarter going. And, you know, it takes a lot of work, a lot of dedication. And I didn't want to go into this and just asking for, you know, it's a costly game. It's a costly game to make, partially because I'm hiring a lot of people to make this game.
Yeah.
And I think that because I'm not an established developer, I was really concerned that going on Kickstarter might be difficult for me to get some traction. I did look into it quite a bit, and right now I decided to not go towards that. Maybe in the future.
Yeah. Well, so what are your thoughts now with, because I've seen this happen, is that indie developers might be first to an idea or a concept, and it just takes so long because of other obligations and everything else that someone else or some other company releases a similar thing or kind of takes that market by storm with something else because they've done it sooner or faster.
Sure, but I don't think that,
and it may not matter for some games, by the way.
I mean, no, but also I don't think that there's a lot of value in ideas. People put a lot of put a lot of value on ideas, but I think the execution of the idea is really what matters. I'm making a JRPG, and there are like 1,000 JRPGs on the market, and same for fighting games, and same for first-person shooters. And a lot of them have similar ideas, for instance, World War II first-person shooter. But it's the way you approach it, and the kinds of mechanics that you have, and just making sure that you have something that stands out in the market in the way your game is executed, I think is really important.
Well, would you say there are thousands of indie RPGs for sale? Like indie JRPGs, that's what I meant.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Because of RPG Maker, and if you go on Steam, there are a lot of RPG Maker games out there. And there are a few good ones. To the Moon was all the rave a few years ago, for instance. And I've seen other great ones. But I think part of the reason why I decided not to go with RPG Maker is just because the limits of that engine. I think, especially the old version, I don't know about the new one, but the old one was kind of limited, and it limited the kind of design decisions you can make for your game. And it kind of makes everything feel a bit the same because of it. So yeah, that's another place where I'm another JRPG, but I think I have different opportunities because I did make my engine. And if I feel like my game is missing something specific, I can just create the feature and do it myself and know that it'll work because I made it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I bring up this stuff because I just see that timing can play an important role in things. You know, if you're the right game at the right time, you get a huge opportunity. Even if you're a better game at the wrong time, you don't necessarily have a chance. And, you know, but then again, it could be different. And so I was just reading about Undertale, right? And maybe it was part of the notoriety of getting funded on Kickstarter, but, you know, he sold now 500,000 copies, but it goes to what you're saying about having a unique experience and doing it well. It wasn't like a low quality game. It was done well. Well, I'm just, cause I'm trying to balance, cause you know, on this show, when I discuss with some developers, I'm like, hey, you should keep on releasing, keep on updating, whatever. But you know, look, there's a cost to that. And that cost is quality, in the sense that if you're constantly releasing crap, you know, then you, even your core audience may not even respond when you finally have it right. But yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out, is what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, and I definitely put a lot of thought into every decision I make, be it what am I releasing now, what am I revealing, what am I not revealing. I think the fact that the story is written, it's on paper, and it's a quite a long story, actually, and that's part of the reason why the development is taking so much time, because I could decide, hey, this location, I'll just cut it out and it won't I'll just patch the story otherwise. But at the same time, you know, it'll feel patched, and it won't have that experience, that consistently quality experience that I'm looking for. I'm really putting a lot of time into, I want locations to feel unique, and have different mechanics for every location. And it's you know, it, of course it's going to create delays, and of course it's going to be problematic as far as that goes. But at the same time, once it gets into the player's hand, they might not have noticed if that unique section wasn't there. But if it's there, they'll notice it, and I think that's the kind of things which will build that audience and might snowball once the game is released, and people will say, "Hey, this game, you know, it's not just a typical JRPG. There's a lot of cool things to discover in it." And it's kind of what Undertale did. Although, you know, Undertale had a great Kickstarter experience at the beginning, a great mechanics to present. But I don't think anyone expected that game to blow up the way it did, and it did because it's a consistently incredible experience throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, and. Yeah, and so that goes to quality, right? And yeah. So what about, though, working with all these artists and having a partner versus working alone? Like, so, you know, the current model it seems like you're using right now is you're the main person on the project and then you have contractors versus working with someone else kind of like in a partnership mode. Have you – what do you prefer?
So,
I know you said you tried it a little or something. So
yeah, I did try to find a partner early on, and it didn't work out. I don't think I was in touch with, you know, again, I'm going to say it again, but it's all about a level of quality. And my vision for the project wasn't the same as his, and we weren't really on the same level as far as what we were expecting visually. So it didn't work out on that sense. I do wish I had a partner, because I do feel at times like, you know, I basically have to work twice as hard as an artist would, because I'm not trained in that sense, so I have to really look into the details and look into the minutiae of everything. There's definitely a cost associated with that. And for future projects, I would definitely want to have an artist on the team and just be able to focus on either the programming or the design or both, but just not have to manage all of the visuals as well. I think it would accelerate the process, and I think, it would definitely simplify things for me. But at the end of the day, it's you have to work with the opportunities you're given, and sometimes it's a matter of, well, I can either not work on my own and work twice as hard, or just not do the game. So I just decided to roll up my sleeves and say, hey, I'm gonna invest everything I have into this game because I believe in it.
Okay. And when do you expect it to be released?
So right now I'm aiming for a fall 2016, fall of this year. Cool. I have a board of things to do right now, but it's over the years I've hired a lot of great contractors, and I've in essence I've built a team that way. Some people have been on this project for years at this point, and they're really putting in their all, and they're doing amazing stuff, stuff I wouldn't even have imagined when I started this project. And it's definitely delayed from what I originally expected, but the development process has been going on really well up until now, and especially during the last year, I've really the project has moved forward tremendously, and I'm really confident that the fall of this year we'll finally see the release of Aerolite Core for all to experience.
And I guess through this journey, what are two or three things that you wish you would have done differently that might have either accelerated or made the experience better or more effective, you know, the time that you invested in the project?
The Aerolite Core probably shouldn't have been my first project because, it did take a lot longer than I expected. I wish I didn't work on something that was so driven by content. I think if I had made a game that was more driven by some mechanics, I'm going to name it again, but Super Meat Boy, which is fairly simple. You have to polish it. Obviously, you have to polish the controls. But as far as level making, it's fairly simple to create new levels. At least compared to a more content driven game. So I would have made a different type of game for my first one. I also made a lot of mistakes early on when I was hiring people. I was still new to just understanding what people were offering, how to evaluate if they were the right people for the job. Some people underestimate the workload that's required. And I made a big blunder early on where I hired an Indian firm to do a lot of assets for the game, and that really did not turn out well at all. So I worked with them for several months. I paid a good amount up front. I'm not gonna say how much, but yeah, it did eat into my finances quite a bit, and. They definitely did not deliver what they said they would. They didn't have the right people. They didn't quite understand what the job required, and they were plagiarizing some assets. I found some of the stuff that they were presenting me was just outright copied from other sources. So that was definitely a huge blunder on my part, a huge learning experience, and
Well, how did you find them? Because it seems like now a lot of these online sites, they give you ratings, or you can see the rating of the firm.
Yeah.
Or even individual, and maybe that. I don't know if they had it then.
To be honest, the firm is Lycus Arts Entertainment, and okay. if you search it for it on Google, I think two of the top 10 searches is me saying that they stole from me. So and other stuff that other hits from them is just their stuff. There's no criticism about them, and there's really very little information about them. So I think there are so many companies out there trying to make their mark, and it's easy to fall under the radar, especially if people don't post about their experiences like that with other people.
So now you just hire individual artists or something.
Yeah, I have worked with other firms since then. However, now I just don't pay upfront anymore. It's one of my requirements.
That is interesting that you paid upfront, and I feel like, I guess that is kind of like an intro mistake.
Well, it is and it isn't, because I think if you go with big companies, there will always be an upfront fee.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I see it all the time, and usually it'll be an upfront fee followed by payments every such and such milestones.
Yeah.
But in my case, after getting burned like that, I decided I'm not going to pay upfront anymore, and I'm sure it does close some doors, but at the same time, it's one way to learn about a bad experience. And, I think the artists as well have a way to mitigate that. They can put a mark that it's their art until I've paid for it. So, there are ways for them to protect themselves as well.
And any other lessons learned, or any other things that you wish you would have done differently, or?
Well, I mean, I think the entire thing has been just a big learning experience in general. You find out what works and what doesn't work. I think just wanting to work with a partner next time, and just, you know, I'm putting a lot more time right now to just get into a community of devs and just getting to know people.
Yeah.
And looking at their projects as well, and learning from their experiences. But I think that's the kind of thing that's important for me to open doors, probably not on this project, but on the next project that I'll do. I definitely want to make sure that I have more resources and not have to take so much on my shoulders, because, you know, I'm one skinny guy. So it can be quite a burden sometimes.
Yeah. What do you think of, so it sounds like you would prefer a developer partner, or would you want an artist partner, or what kind of partner would you want?
Definitely an artist partner, because I didn't want to go with a publisher, because I still want to have some sense of control over the game that I'm making. And I think that that's part of what finding the right artist would mean. It's just figuring out, okay, this is the project, you know, understanding what the project is before deciding, okay, yes, we will work together.
And I guess that's one of the challenges, is that, well, I guess if you had a partner, it would go a little faster, but also just keeping someone else engaged for that long, especially if they have other potential obligations and things going on. So,
absolutely. And I don't know, you know, I've been at this for 4 years, and I'm at this daily for 4 years. It's not like I'm taking a week off here or there to work on other stuff. I'm really working on this every day. And I think it's tough to find people with this kind of dedication to just one project, and just accept that it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of polish. Things are, you know, sometimes you just get fed up and you want to, you know, you want to give up. But I think the fact that I haven't given up, and the fact that I'm still pushing through to this day, you know, I think that's the kind of attitude you have to be successful in the indie game business.
Yeah. Do you feel that indies need to have partners to be a success? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think you need a partner to have a success. I can, I think, again, Undertale, it's project dude. So that's an example. I know. I think that the original, the Braid was the brainchild of one man, and there are a few. Antichamber, and I never feel like enough people know about this game, but Antichamber is a brilliant game. It's a brilliant first person puzzle game, which, you know, it's like Portal, but it's so much more complex than Portal.
Isn't that the one that took a long time to make?
I believe it took 7 years.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, because I saw a talk at GDC, or there was like a video on it.
Yeah, it's by Alexander Bruce, and it took a long time to make, and probably because he was on his own and he had to learn a lot of stuff. But that is a brilliant game, and I really applaud his work on that. So there's definitely a place for solo devs, but I think you need to have
as long as they do a good job, right?
As long as they do a good job, and I think that just working less on making an aesthetic that is less content driven, maybe less story driven, is a better way to go if you're a solo dev. Although, again, Undertale, so what do I know?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to understand, because, you know, what I've seen is that having a partner, at least from my personal experience, it is more fun. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you bring up good points of all these other developers who don't necessarily have partners. I mean, you have stuff like League of Legends, right? You have some of these really big games where they were started with partnerships, you know, or something like that. But you do have smaller indie games, and even Minecraft initially was started out solitarily. But I think one potential difference is, this is a model that I've seen work, is that the developer is actually not solo. What it is that there's a community around them that's giving them feedback, and they're feeding that community, and it's kind of like a co-creative process. And maybe that community doesn't get credit for it, but, like, for example, Notch in Minecraft and posting on the TIGSource forums and just getting feedback there, right? I mean, that's, you know, that's part of the development process. And that's a little different than the approach you're taking, where you're trying to polish everything and make everything perfect. And the reason I mentioned that is because I don't know if with Undertale, because they had the Kickstarter, if they were doing constant updates to the funders, which may have helped improve the process of the development, which then raised its quality. And so it wasn't really a solo development. It was a multi-person development. It's just that those other people, those quote partners, were just funders.
Yeah, sure. I would imagine so. And I definitely agree with you that... I do think that one of my personal weaknesses is just the ability to build a community. I think my personal strengths are really interaction one-on-one, like I'm doing with you, and just communicating with one person at a time or a small group. But I think building something like stuff like Twitter and social media in general, yeah. Reddit, TigSource, these are all, I know they're there and I understand them to a degree. And I do have a Twitter, for example. But at the same time, I don't think it's something that I quite master, if that's the right term. It's not something that I quite understand. And beyond that, I will admit that it's also sometimes just the feeling of having so much work to do, and it's seeing that there's also this to do, and just it's tough to do everything at once. And some, you know, and it's probably definitely for the worse for the project, as and it's too bad for the community. I really wish I could do a better job, but sometimes, yeah, it's just that there are not enough hours in the day to get all of the work done.
Yeah, so you do feel that the solo developer without community can work? I mean, that's what I'm really asking, is that can the solo developer without community work? Because you're right, there have been solo developers that have made it huge, that have done a good job, right? That have fulfilled their goals. But what I'm wondering is, was it with or without an online community?
I think come fall 2016, I'll have a better answer to that question.
Yeah, what are your thoughts, though, on community? Because you're right, that is one thing that I noticed discussing things with you, is that sometimes with other developers, there is that community, that sense of community, or Twitter, or all the social media. They're even reaching out. And you've kind of started that, where you're reaching out to other game developers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and actually,
And have you found that even useful, or maybe it even gets in the way?
I think it's useful it's such a balance, like, and it depends on the platform. Like, I'm using, there's a Slack group for indie devs, which I've been attending for a few months now. And I really feel a sense of community in that sense with other devs. But it really is a indie game driven Slack. It's not specifically about my game and my approach. Yeah. So yeah, I do think it's good. I definitely can't disagree with you that not building, like, I do want to build a community, and I have actually asked around and just talked with people and just tried to figure out what my best approach to get the word out, to get the word out to people, and yeah, just communicating in general.
But
it's yeah, tough. It's a lot of work, and I think some people are just better suited for that kind of job. I'm doing what I can in that sense, but I also have to make sure that the game just sees a release in general.
Yeah, and maybe you're, I mean, this is a genre that you like, so even community may not even matter. If you make the game that you like, that you love, then community, maybe, you know, maybe my approach on community is different, because it's more fun when you're working with someone else, I feel, mm-hmm, as long as it's the right chemistry.
Yeah.
But okay, I just wanted your opinion on that. But I mean, you do bring up some excellent points about all these other indie developers that are solo.
And at the end of the day, it's, for me, it's like you said, it's about making the game. And I think that tends to be where my head is in general, as far as making Aerolite Core. It's just focusing on the game itself and focusing on bringing that to completion.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, there are days where it's not fun. There are days where I'm tired and I can't, you know, stand it anymore. There are so many things left to do. But you just have, I feel like it's the kind of thing where you have to push through and just dig deep into your own resources. And that's basically the approach I've tended to have, just build upon myself and my own strengths in general.
And do you have the next project in mind, or once you release, you're going to spend maybe a lot more time now marketing it?
Yes.
Okay.
And by that I mean both are true. I have a the next project that I want to make, I have it in mind, but I also want to spend some time. Like I won't be starting immediately after releasing Aerolite Core. I definitely want to support Aerolite Core for definitely months after I release it. Just, people will come up with stuff and, oh, this would be an interesting thing. Okay, well, I can add this extra feature. I don't want it to be a static game once it's released. I want it to just evolve a little bit, and maybe I'd like to provide maybe a bit of DLC. I have some free, like, now that the assets are created, I could create side stories
Oh,
and
yeah.
just release them for free. Just an extra tidbit about a character that wasn't a part of the main game. So just keep the players engaged and add value to the game in general.
Would these side stories be as a separate game or just a book or a blog post or how would that work?
Oh no, it would be direct DLC for the
Oh,
game.
okay, inside the game. Okay.
Yeah, because the way my story is structured is, it's a fairly linear story, and you follow Cardan on his adventures, but there are some party members which come and go, and they are all interesting in their own rights, and they all have their stories to tell. So I think I could dig into those areas to create side stories for the characters.
What are you constantly updating the story, or when did the story finally get set pretty much in stone, or is it like a living document and you're constantly revising and adding to it?
It was mostly finished in 2013, actually.
Okay.
After I finished the foundations for my gaming engine, I started on the story, and I wrote the first draft, followed by a second draft, and yeah, it's been pretty much set in mostly in stone since that time. Sometimes I will revise a few areas because something might not make as much sense as I thought it might, or just to add purpose, add an extra purpose to some character motivations. But I am making sure to, I don't want to be constantly adding things and just creating an impossible to complete game. It's pretty much set in stone, and the modifications that I am making are minors and just polishing the rough edges.
Okay. And any other than last thoughts or feedback or suggestions to the listeners out there who are indie game developers?
Yeah, if you're gonna make a game, then make a game and be proud of your game and just give it your all. I think it's important to just go out there and say, this is my game, and I've poured the, as they say, the blood, sweat, and tears into this. And just, it's if you're not having a rough time, and if it's not becoming difficult, you have to ask yourselves, are you putting in 110% into this? Are you investing everything you should? I think it's worthwhile as a developer, but also once it's done, it goes into the hand of the players, and I think it's important to just, the players will pay for your product, and I think it's worth putting it all the effort you can to make sure that the player enjoys it, because they deserve it, and they're the ones who enable us to do this job.
And okay, yeah. So you're an advocate of just pushing as much as the best that you can.
Yeah,
Okay.
exactly. Yeah, and you gotta understand, like, I'm not saying, I do think that there are projects which might go overboard like that. I'm thinking of Duke Nukem Forever, which was in development for like 12 years, and you have to, I don't think it's about settling as much as you have to accept, okay, this is my game, this is what I'm producing, and not be distracted by every shiny thing that comes
Yeah.
left and right, because other people will have new ideas, and you're gonna think, oh, well, that would be fun in my game, but you have to accept, okay, this is what I'm going for my game. I'm going to push these aspects, and it's going to make a great game, and I'll pocket the other ideas for future games.
You know, that's really a good point, though. How do you balance the fact that over the last several years, new games have come out that may have introduced you to new ideas, new ways to succeed, new ways to do whatever? How do you keep, I mean, shouldn't you adjust your original vision to maybe reflect some of those changes or some of those insights? Or,
well, it all matters how everything works within the context of the game that I'm making.
Okay.
If there are good ideas outside, I don't think they would necessarily always work for my game. And if they did, that's great. But there will always be new ideas. There will always be interesting new elements. And you have to ask yourself, am I improving on my game, or am I tired as a developer? Because we work so long on something, sometimes we feel we lose the wow factor, just because even if it's something great, we've been working on it so long that we have our vision tainted by that. So you have to ask yourself, if I'm changing something, is it because the other one is better, or is it because it's newer? And new doesn't always mean better, especially when you've built your entire system around very specific things. You change one thing, sometimes it might make everything else crumble.
And so you've never had that temptation to be like, oh, I should change this or I should change that?
Well, I have changed systems, but I didn't change them because I saw something better. I changed them because my system, when I was playing it, didn't work the way I wanted to. It wasn't as fun as I wanted to. So it was more of a matter of it wasn't fun within the context of my game, rather than because I saw something better or different elsewhere. That being said, there are levels I did take inspiration from outside sources of things that I have appeared since I've started the game, but these are added to sections which weren't completed yet. So as long as something isn't completed, isn't made, I'm fine with changing it on paper. But once I've integrated it into the game, if I need to scrap a few months of work, well, then there has to be a really good reason why I'm choosing to scrap that work.
Okay. And finally, last but not least, what other indie games do you play, or what other games do you like to play?
So right now I'm playing Pony Island. I think everyone is playing Pony Island. And if you're not, you, the listener, you should be. I don't know if this was made by a single person or a team, but it's a brilliant game. It's a bit hard to explain, but it's one of those experience game which lasts about 3 hours. But it's really, I would really recommend it in general. I don't know if you've played it.
No, I'm reading about it right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the visuals are really funky. It's hard to make out what the game is about, and it's a bit meta. It blends like a bit of a horror with some puzzle elements and some a bit of an action element. It's really weird. It's really meta, and it's really worth checking out, because I think they really managed to make something different with their approach.
I mean, do you feel, because look, you mentioned Undertale and you mentioned Pony Island, and a lot of the, and from what I've read of both of those, they kind of add this humorous or comedic element. Maybe if, I don't know if I'm even understanding if Pony Island is even comedic, but I'm just going to read the first paragraph from Wikipedia, which says, Pony Island is a video game developed and published by Daniel Mullins as a metafictional game. The game has the player interact with what appears to be an old arcade cabinet game called Pony Island. The player soon discovers the game is corrupted by a satanic being which is trying to claim the player's soul for itself. The player is aided by the soul of a previous player who helps the player access Pony Island's internal programming to get around the traps left by Satan and save their soul. Is it comedic? Because, I mean, it just seems funny to me.
You know what? I get why it would seem funny. It's the kind of game where The premise is absolutely funny, but once you get into the execution of the game itself, it's really creepy. It's disturbing, and I think that's one of those games where that's what makes Pony Island specifically absolutely brilliant, because you might come into this thinking, oh, I'm gonna have a good time and laugh, and 30 minutes in you're oh, I'm not laughing at all. I feel terrible, and I'm scared of what's being presented, but I'm so consumed by this game, I have to continue. So yeah, it's definitely a very engaging game in general.
Yeah,
and I think just to get to your point about humor, I think humor is good, but I think it's also really dangerous, because I think a lot of people think they're funny, and they might be funny to a very specific audience, or maybe a very specific context. And if you're Undertale, great, because you've connected with enough people for that to work out. But if you're, you know, I'm not gonna name other games, but there have been other games which have presented themselves as, oh, it's a funny game, and you get into it and it can be a bit simple, a very, very simple kind of humor, or very humor that's already been seen before in other titles. I do have some humor to Our Light Core, but I didn't want to push only humor, because I think it can be a trap for the developers.
Yeah, and it says Pony Island was developed during a game jam. So what are your thoughts? I mean, have you been prototyping other ideas or even experimenting with other ideas while you're working on this? Or do you feel that you should, as a developer, just focus on one thing and maybe just study other games to get your different perspective?
Yeah, I think because of the time it's taking for Our Light Core to be finished, I would rather spend all of my energy into this one title until it sees its completion. I definitely want to... Before I start my next title, I do want to work on some prototypes and just figure out stuff that works, and just get a lot of ideas off my chest, just to, you know, cleanse myself creatively before starting an entirely new project. I think game jams are interesting. I must admit that I never participated in one. It's something that I'd like to try out and just see the community around that and just understand better the that kind of approach.
Okay, great. And once again, where can listeners find out more information about your game?
All right, so the best place to find out all the information about Our Light Core is the website, ourlightcore.com.
Okay, how do you spell that?
Yeah, it's ourlightcore.com.
Okay, so ourlightcore.com.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And I have a Twitter, which is dragon_slumber.
Okay.
There's also a Facebook page, Dragon Slumber Games. And those are really the main three places where people can go and learn about the game. And I really encourage people to go to the website, try out the demo, the alpha, and just give me their feedback about it. What do they like? Don't like? I really want to hear everything that players have to say. I have my own perspective about it, but I think at the end of the game, at the end of the day, I'm just making the game. I think the players are those who really matter.
Yeah, and have you been actually play testing the game, like watching actual players play it? Because what I've found is that just even making the tutorial is so critical.
Yeah, yeah.
And that requires so much time sometimes.
Absolutely.
Know?
And I did watch a few players try out the game and just play specific sections of the game. And I would come out of there with pages and pages of notes of things that I have to adjust and just make more obvious in general. So I'm definitely always looking to that direction for to improve upon it.
Okay, great. Thanks again. We're talking once again with the developer of Our Light Core. And thanks again for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cool. Take care.